Yes, yes, sir, Mr. Smith.
My name is Greg Smith. I'm an attorney in Amherst County. I was appointed by the court to represent Mr. Bennett on appeal. The court granted writ on two counts.
Excuse me, do you wish to reserve
yes,
some time?
Yes, 3 minutes.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
I apologize to the court.
No, that's fine.
The most interesting of the two issues, I think, is the issue of whether or not the audio, two audios and the video that were allowed in, and the video are of a testimonial nature and therefore are subject to the Sixth Amendment right to confrontation.
How would you confront a video anyway?
Well, I think the interesting thing is the Commonwealth and the Crawford case both dealt with testimonial hearsay.
Right.
The Virginia court has also dealt with that, but analyzed it slightly differently than the Crawford case. They analyzed the evidence in a hearsay context, but they also analyzed it in whether it was testimonial or not. And I think everyone would agree that hearsay is not the only testimonial evidence. So I'm asking the court to view the audio and the video, first determine whether it's testimonial, whether hearsay or not, and there we'd be dealing with a whole different set of exceptions. The Crawford court dealt with a lot of hearsay exceptions where the court determined reliability based on hearsay rules.
And so if we're not bound by the hearsay rules, the fact that the video is not a person does not present a...
Well, what we have to see is whether or not the defendant's right to confront his witnesses. That's the text of the Sixth Amendment. What we did in this case is we allowed the Commonwealth to substitute two audios and a video that were prepared solely for the purpose of trial.
Yeah.
Following Brooks, the informant was a police agent. The whole thing was set up and prepared to try Mitchell Bennett for distribution of a substance. They could have let in, the court could have let the audio or the video in for two purposes, if the proper standards were met. Now, I'm handicapped because there were no motions for the authentication of the video or objection to its authentication made. I'm stuck with that. So I will acknowledge that that was not done. I tried to remedy it, and I think accurately that was denied. That still doesn't stop the fact that the court allowed the video in. I submit the only way he could have is as illustrative testimony. He allowed the video in to illustrate the testimony of the witness who would have appeared had he not died, the confidential informant. The impact on the defendant is the same. It was to illustrate the testimony of a witness that never testified. So, therefore, he was denied any chance to cross-examine. He can't cross-examine, as the court accurately pointed out, a series of acts on a video that was totally in the control of the witness. Now, that was in the transcript. The officers could not authenticate the video. They were not in control of it. They turned it on as a cell phone. They turned it on, but they freely admitted in their examination that the informant had the cell phone in his possession and could control what it recorded at any time. That eliminates the possibility that the court allowed it, and we have to presume the court followed the law, allowed the telephone video in as a silent witness. We most often see the silent witness exception where we have a fixed camera that records on its own many things that occur that are not witnessed by a person. There's when the accuracy of the recording camera and the fact that it has not been interrupted, and in the Brooks case cited by the Commonwealth, That was established in the Brooks case where it said the exception of the silent witness of the video was met because there were time on the screen that showed time labels on the screen and that the function of the video that would have allowed that to be altered had been taken out.
Well, in this case, wasn't there testimony from an officer saying that he or she, I forget what gender, actually controlled the operation of the camera? That could not be shut off by the confidential informant.
He did.
Could put it in his pocket to keep it surreptitious.
Well, that wasn't the only way he could do it. He could do it by putting it in his pocket. He could do it by turning it on his leg. I don't think there's any question in the record that all the officer did was turn the camera on. That would be to say that if I had a remote control and you had a camera and I was the only one that could turn it on, that gives me no control over what it records. That remains with you because you have the camera. He simply activates the phone. So in this case, the confidential informant controlled what was recorded and what was not recorded, which to me was an interesting point because the judge in his decision in this case said he wasn't concerned with what he didn't see. He was only concerned with what he did see. Well, if that evidence, if just simply having a silent video and then having parts of it on an audio without a video as a substitute, a direct substitute for the deceased witness, is not testimonial and giving the defendant the right to confront and cross-examine the confidential informant who controlled what was recorded, if that doesn't violate the Sixth Amendment right to confrontation, I don't see how it's ever done.
Mr. Smith, let me ask you a couple questions here about the video.
Yes, ma'am.
So you don't dispute that in Virginia the law is that videos are essentially viewed the same way photographs are viewed, correct? Under the same...
They both can come in. Well, videos are a little different. I think photographs... As long as they actually reflect what they're a picture of, they come in.
Well, the Wilson,
videos are
the
a little
Wilson
different.
Case, the Wilson case says that videos are admissible under the same principles that photographs are admissible under. And that there's two theories. One is to illustrate a witness's testimony, and the other is as the independent silent witness. Okay? So there's two separate ways.
That's correct.
Okay? So it's an either or. It's not a you have to prove both.
Well, I think they can come in for either reason.
Correct.
But I think that the foundation for admitting them is different for both.
Right. I just want to make sure we're clear that they can come in as an independent silent witness.
They can.
Okay.
I don't deny that. But the difference is this court had before it the solid evidence that the informant, the intended witness in this matter, was in total control of what was and was not recorded on that cell phone during the entire time that the relevant activity took place. The record also shows that he exercised that control, or apparently did, in several sections of that video because of the gaps and the bright spaces on the screen. For our practical purposes, for the purposes of this, I think we can say he controlled what was shown and what wasn't. I don't think there's much doubt in that. There's no proof otherwise in the record.
I understand your argument on the audio, I think, because you hear the discussion about the drugs, what he wanted to buy. He said, yeah, I got that, so forth. On the video, though, and there's not even any voice. There's just
there's
picture.
None.
But you do see the two PCP-laced cigarettes. I guess that's how it's... I'm maybe not describing it exactly right. But you do see, it looks like, drugs being held there and exchanged through the video. But there's no testimony. And apparently he's having the now deceased informant was having some trouble with the camera, at least because there are times where you see absolutely nothing, and there are times where you're seeing parts of them, but not much of them, and it's when you watch it, is a bit frustrating if he's really able to control that thing completely. So why would the video be hearsay or in testimonial hearsay?
It's testimonial evidence.
What is it?
I am not arguing hearsay. Today it's testimonial evidence for which the Sixth Amendment gives the defendant a right to cross-examine. And he can't cross-examine a video. What was done in this case because of the death of the informant and because of necessity is the Commonwealth Attorney basically put before the court a partial audio, a partial video, from which, as Your Honor, Judge Beals, you were assuming, the court did that all the way through. The court took what was intended to be illustrative evidence, drew all kinds of inferences and assumptions, just as you did. He had those two plastic containers the video shows, and you said that you can assume are illegal drugs. I don't know that I would assume that. I don't know much about drugs, but given the cases and the Commonwealth's argument, and in light of the audio and the setup of the sale, I guess you could assume that or infer that.
I was going to say infer that.
But you can infer different. Can you also infer from that evidence that that was the same two packages that the police officer testified that he received from the informant?
Well, Mr. Smith, that, you know, that sort of goes to your sufficiency piece, but...
That does, but it's the same issue,
is it
not?
But from a standpoint of sufficiency of the evidence, we have cases all the time where police officers will give a confidential informant money. They'll search them, they'll give them money, they go in with the money, they come out, they have the drugs, they don't have the money. Confidential informant is never put on the stand. It's the officers that testify. I searched him. I gave him the money. He went in. He bought the drugs. He came out with the drugs. I searched him again. He had no money left. He had the drugs. And that's sufficient because the officers, you know, basically set up the sale. In this instance, you have the addition of the officers listening to everything on the audio.
So, if there's no right of confrontation, we no longer need witnesses. We simply need separate partial audios and separate partial videos, and we just do away with the need of witnesses. There is no right to confrontation. We let pictures and words. But
I guess my point, my question to you was, we have case law that says you don't even need any of that. If an officer gives a confidential informant money, and they are supposed to go buy the drugs, and they go in and they come back out with the drugs and no money.
And the informant doesn't testify? I'm not familiar with those cases.
The officers testify, but the informant does not.
I'm not familiar with the case that I could find where the confidential informant didn't testify in a situation of that nature.
Okay.
There may be some. If they are, I missed them. I think I'm at the end of my time and I reserve for them.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Dunn-Pierre.
May it please the court, Brittany Dunn-Pierre for the Commonwealth. The admission of the video did not violate the Confrontation Clause, neither did the admission of the audio, and the evidence was sufficient to convict Bennett of drug distribution. The trial court correctly held that the silent video did not violate the Confrontation Clause because the silent video did not contain a statement, it did not contain any assertions or make any assertions, it only depicted actions. And because of that...
Were there parts of the video that contained assertions?
No, there are not parts of the video that contained assertions.
Okay. Well, there certainly was not a claim that there were assertions in the video.
No, there's not a claim that there were assertions in the video, no.
There's no sound to the video at all at any point.
No, it is entirely silent. The silent video also would have been admissible as a silent, independent photographic witness because it speaks for itself. The appropriate objection at trial would have been on the grounds of authentication, but because that wasn't raised, again, that's now barred from discussion here. And this case is distinguishable from Cyprus, which was relied on in Bennett's brief, because in Cyprus, that was about whether a certificate of analysis was testimonial hearsay. And in that case, it was, because it was like an affidavit, because there were statements in it. And again, here, there's no statements in the silent video. The audio also did not violate the confrontation clause, because it was not offered to prove the truth of the matter asserted. It's not hearsay. Instead, it was offered by the Commonwealth for three different reasons. First, to establish that the confidential informant that day only interacted with Bennett. To also establish that the confidential informant did actually interact with Bennett. And finally, to provide context to Bennett's statements made in response to the confidential informant statements as a party admission.
Well, can I ask you where you hear him saying what he wants, the confidential informant wants to buy, and I'm not quoting this exactly right, I'm sure, but oh yeah, well, I've got that, sure. And then they meet. I think, if I understand opposing counsel's argument, that's where there's essentially some testimony from the confidential informant that's testimonial hearsay that now can't be cross-examined.
Are you saying the statements that I want two funny sticks and a whole 3.5? Yeah. Those statements?
That, and then I've got that, great, yeah. Yeah, that sort of thing.
That part of the audio? Mm-hmm. Yes, well, if it was hearsay, then the confrontation clause would apply to it, and the analysis under Crawford would apply. But because, again, it wasn't hearsay, because it was offered for three different reasons other than what was actually asserted, the confrontation clause is not implicated or violated.
So you would concede that it's testimonial, but it's not hearsay?
Yes, it's testimonial, but it's not hearsay. And then onto the issue of sufficiency.
Let me ask you, before you move on,
yes,
to sufficiency, how does the case of Swain v. Commonwealth apply to the scenario here? That's the one where the police overheard the conversation between the defendant and another person.
So in Swain v. Commonwealth, the
I mean, it's pretty similar language,
yeah,
to what I'm saying, to the point Judge Beals made.
Yes, it's very similar. So in that case, the words like a 20 was used, and the court there found that the word a 20 did not rest for its value upon the credibility of the out-of-court asserter. And so it was to explain the defendant's responses, it just showed that that's what the defendant was trying to get, was to supply drugs. It didn't matter what the confidential informant actually wanted, so it didn't rely on that credibility of the witness or what the subjective intent of the, not witness, of the confidential informant was. So now moving to sufficiency.
Thank you.
This is not a case that was decided upon inferences. Instead, there's a reasonable inference that Bennett distributed the drugs, and this was based on the fact that the confidential informant was searched prior to the control by his person, his motorcycle, and his cigarette box were all searched to exclude the possibility that it contained any contraband. And then once he returned from that controlled by, he returned with two cigarettes dipped in PCP and also cocaine, and he returned that to the police. The video and photographs also depict Bennett with the items that are identical to the items recovered by the police that turned out to be the drugs. Three officers testified that they were able to identify Bennett's voice from the live wire of the recording and the interactions between Bennett and the confidential informant, and that was based on their many years of interacting with Bennett. The three officers were also able to testify that they didn't hear anyone else's voice during those conversations, and the confidential informant only brought back to the police officers $40 of the $270 supplied by the police officers to the confidential informant once he left Bennett. So when you take all of those facts, the circumstances, and reasonable inferences in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, it becomes clear that the trial court's judgment was supported by the evidence and was not plainly wrong. If there are no further questions, I ask that the court affirm.
Very well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Judge, the argument of the Attorney General, I think, illustrates the problem. We submit to the court that the lower court could not have admitted the audio and the video, the video under the silent witness rule. We got to assume he filed the law so he allowed the video in as illustrative testimony. It's the only two reasons it could have come in. You can't use illustrative testimony and draw inferences from it if the witness whose testimony it intended to illustrate is not there to testify. This court drew numerous inferences, not only to the chain for the drugs, but also to the guilt of the defendant, based on partial images of everything that occurred. There were unknown parties admitted by police officers in the record in the room. There's only a brief period of time if you compare it to the total time this transaction was taking place, but yet the defendant had to sit there and was never able to ask the first question in cross-examination. What I'm asking this court to do is determine that there are other types of evidence that are testimonial in nature that the Sixth Amendment applies to. Crawford didn't deal with that. Cypress didn't. But now Crawford has made it necessary that that's going to have to be dealt with. If we'd have had a silent witness, I would be making a totally different argument. If we had a video that was operating properly, that in itself showed the entire transaction, and that's the problem we have here.
Doesn't that set up your problem about the authentication piece
and the reliability? The authentication is an issue that I have to deal with and cannot. But that doesn't alter the fact that the Sixth Amendment right, I think, still exists. If the court finds that the lower court could only have let the video in as illustrative testimony, then the defendant has the right to cross-examine the witness who prepared the illustrative testimony solely for the purpose of the trial. And the same is partially true for the audio. So not to be able to cross-examine the confidential informant and just let the video and the audio or parts of it substitute and allow the trier of fact to draw all the inference it needs from the facts on a partial recordation of it seems to me to directly violate the defendant's right to confront. The motion on the sufficiency is simply derived from the fact that there were no objections made at the lower court to the chain of evidence. That doesn't remove from the Commonwealth that it has to prove its case beyond a reasonable doubt. The only thing that I could find in the record of the actual physical existence of the drugs was the photograph and the video that showed the defendant holding the two cellophane packages what appeared to be the exact same drugs that were ordered by the confidential informant. To get that from that point in the video and draw, one, it was exchanged. Two, it was paid for. Three, it was the defendant did it. Four, that the confidential informant, once receiving it, didn't alter it, carried it out, and gave it to the police officer. If that's not inference upon inference upon inference from one brief second, then I would submit that the Commonwealth didn't raise a prima facie case showing that the drugs that were analyzed were the same as what was in the two packages, which you could only assume by looking were drugs.
Thank you very much. We will step down.